My dear students, it's Monday morning, January 16th, 2023, and I'm happy to welcome everyone in front of me and all those online, or on the screen, I should say. Yesterday's shiur, I came home and I had such nachat, you have no idea. I developed two ideas in the middle of the shiur based upon the responser in front of me, the responsum, I should say. And I opened up Makor Rishon, my daughter gave me Friday's weekend paper, and two of the topics I discussed in shiur right there in Makor Rishon, major articles. Bor Shekivanti Ledas Gedalim. I'll elaborate next Sunday, Bezrat Hashem. But one correction I want to make, when I was dealing with the story with the Ramban doing an operation on a Gentile woman so she could conceive, and Rabbeinu Yonah criticized him. It seems at one point I said the run, and Jacob, my dear student Jacob Levinstein, who had the text of the tshuva in front of him, said to me, it's not the run, it's Rabbeinu Yonah. So I make that small correction. Okay. Now, let's pick up here. As I said, we've now finished 11 years of work, or more than 11 years, on the history of Torah in the United States. We spent the last year a little bit more on the Satmar Rov, and there's no question that what Satmar has done in America is one of the great achievements. You can't argue with what you see with your own eyes. Williamsburg and Monroe and Palm Tree, it's an achievement. Many followers and much influence beyond Satmar, particularly on the anti-Israel or anti-Zionism. And as I promised you all along, at the very end I want to make a statement of refutation, and it's more than just Satmar. If you follow what I've been saying, and today and next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, in my humble opinion, anyone who's not a religious Zionist is not a proper Jew, period. And I challenge anyone to prove me wrong. So last week, first of all, the question of whether you can speak Hebrew, can't speak Hebrew, there the Satmar is totally off base. And I want to mention that the Rabbi Ari Schwat sent me more information. He had an article on Tchumim and translations, and there's no question about it that we can speak Hebrew on a daily basis. Anyone who criticizes the Hebrew we speak in Israel, because I told you, when I was in the army, basic training, I learned a new Hebrew word, Zelofer. Zelofer. Ribbono shel Olam, Zelohagun. All right, they use it. That's what makes language. I remember I told you I'm a fakeid. Tasu, it's a fix. Fix. I, you know, do it properly. I went over to him afterwards. I said, Atal lamadati milach, yachshav lamadati milach hadasha biyanglit. Fix. Betchum hazeh, b'muvan hazeh. All right, that's language. Language is not from on high. Language is what the people speak. But there's no question that you can speak Hebrew and use Hebrew on a daily basis. But the question of religious Zionism, the question of Theodor Herzl, Avi Avot HaTumah, to quote the Satmar Rov, that is certainly a legitimate question. So we developed last week, and again, everything I'm lecturing on now will shortly be published, so you'll be able to see the sources and everything I write and my footnotes, and you can check it out. There's a tremendous dichotomy between halacha and between what does God want out of us. Halacha, man decides, and my lecture last week, and if you go back 20, 25 years, my lectures on the Kuntres HaShach and Psak Halacha, it's irrefutable that once God gives the Torah, we cannot turn to God to give us answers. We have to give the answers. And Lava Shemayim, I don't want to repeat all my lectures, but there's a world of material, and Torah has to work within a human context. You can't give a Torah and expect people to be above the human level. It's not angels. The angels were opposed to our getting the Torah. Rabbi Shlomo took Midat HaEmet and flung it to the earth. And I told you, Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik dashened on it, Mori Rebbe, Rabbi Soloveitchik dashened on it. All right, over the years I've also had a little bit of a homiletic license on that. The Sota Choshen, etc. But when it comes, what do we have to do in life? What do we belong? Where do we go? And we've had in the last 200 years tremendous problems. And I don't have to elaborate. The Enlightenment, Moshe Mendelssohn, until today people debate, was Moshe Mendelssohn a good Jew? Wasn't he a good Jew? He was the great-grandson of the Rama. He was named for Moshe Isselis. That was his great-grandfather. And there's no question that Moshe Mendelssohn was a Shomer Shabbos and a good Jew all his life. On the other hand, only one grandson died Jewish, and I don't think there was any great-grandchildren who were Jewish. So you see, what do we do? How do we act? Where do we go from here? Where do we live? How do we raise our children? How do we educate them? And this is the idea the Rav developed. When it comes to halacha, the Gemara in Baba Tzia, Daf Nun Tet, Rabbi Eliezer was wrong, plain and simple. They put him in Cherem because halacha is decided not by a heavenly voice. God agreed with Rabbi Eliezer. Talmud de Achnayim, I'm talking about the oven, the whole shaila there. But the majority were against him, and Acharei Rabbim Lahatot. But with the machloket of Yosef and his brothers, so the Rav homiletically interpreted, do we prepare tomorrow? Do we care about tomorrow? Or do we just look today where we are? We're happy. We know we speak the language. We know how to use the supermarket. My grandson, one of my grandchildren, was just in the exposition in Nevada, in what's the town with all the hotels? Las Vegas. And he was just there for the technical exposition, his firm in Israel, because he speaks English, so his boss always takes him, this kid who never wanted to learn English or speak English, but he was forced. His parents spoke English, his grandparents spoke English to him. So today he became very valuable for where he works, 019. And he was at the exposition in Las Vegas, and his boss, these are frum people. And he told me there had to be over 1,000 frum people there. But he went into the supermarket. They have, some of the meals they ate in restaurants, and some they ate in the hotel. And my grandson couldn't believe all the kosher food. You're going to a non-Jewish supermarket and all the hashkacha. All right, I gave him a whole lecture on the OU and how it began, but you see, it works. It works. You have to judge. You have to see. I have a Talmud now. Will you be drinking Coca-Cola on Pesach? Tell me, Avraham. Coca-Cola. Yeah, okay. You owe me a thank you. I had a Talmud in the 60s and again in the 70s. He's in Dublin now for 3 months. That's where the essence is made, and he's the Rav HaMachshir from the OU. Normie Schloss. So you have to give it thanks and thank Normie. He'll be here.
He's her parents'
neighbor. In Atlanta.
He's from Atlanta. Most of
them,
they have an apartment in Yerushalayim.
Oh, yeah, they have a date bought in Yerushalayim. All right, Halavai should retire and be here full time. Sooner the better. Anyway, we're to vote. We need his vote. You see what's going on, what the vote's accomplished here. Be civil war soon, Baruch Hashem. Listen to my lecture of yesterday, the start of yesterday's lecture. I said something that's already been heard around the world, and it opens people's eyes. All right. Anyway, back here. So you see it works. And the Rav said, this was the Machlokes, Yosef and his brothers. Yosef said, we're going to go to Egypt. We have to be prepared, a new technology, a new universe. And the brother said, Kif Sheder Achman Alomali, I'm paraphrasing the Gemara in Chagiga, why do we have to worry about God's plans? We know what we're doing. Let tomorrow take care of tomorrow. And the Rav said, when it comes to these questions, you constantly have to reevaluate. You have to look over your shoulder. Now, what has happened? We had the terrible Holocaust, and now I come to 1956. And in 56, it was the 8th anniversary of the State of Israel. And that was a big anniversary. I'll tell you why. When the state was established, many people doubted that it would survive. It is recorded that, I heard this from people who were there, members of the greater Soloveitchik family, and the Briska Rav, when the state was established, the Briska Rav said, God smiled at us, but he wasn't positive the state would survive. Your rabbi from Forest Hills, remember? Tell me his name. The Torah Vadas graduate, the Munsey graduate, Rabbi Grunblatt, correct. Rabbi Joseph Grunblatt. I heard this story from him. He was learning in the Kollel in Munsey, Rav Reuven Grzybowski, Beit Medrash Elyon. And the state was established. The news reached America on Friday, right? They established the state an hour before Shabbos in Tel Aviv. In America, it was like 11 o'clock in the morning. And on Shabbos, Rabbi Grunblatt walks into the Beis Medrash, and there is this Yudapeish Talmud who had studied by Rabbi Baruch Be'er. And he's walking up and down, and he says, Das kann ich sein. It can't be. It can't be. Rabbi Baruch Be'er hat uns gesagt, dass they will nicht machen am Medina, die Zionisten kennen nicht, they seien nicht frum, die Ewigste wird nicht lassen. It won't be. God won't allow it. The Zionists are not religious. The Ribbono Shel Olam will not allow it. And there's a state, you see. There's something happened. The state was established. Now, even when the state was established, it took a few years. There was a terrible tzenna. I'm forgetting my English. How would you say tzenna in English? A terrible depression here. The food was rationed. What went on? 49, 50, 51. 52, there's one of the freebie paper that they give out. It's a regular, it pays to live in Israel just to get a daily newspaper for nothing, and on the weekend you get endless pamphlets, alonim. It's unbelievable what you get free of charge here. So if you read Yisrael Hayom, every Friday they run in the magazine section what was in Israel 48, 49, and you'll see that the certificates for food, the rations, I remember from World War II in America, and this was Israel. By 56, the country was firmer, and you know, 56 was the Sinai campaign, and Israel showed it was a power. So people were more confident. Yom HaTzmut, the 56, the Rav gave a talk at YU, which people claim is the most important talk he ever gave. It's had tremendous implications for the Jewish people. And every kid growing up in Israel who goes to a religious school, in high school already, he learns this talk. Kol Dodi No Fake. Malka and I happen to be there in person. I told you last week, when you look at the picture of the audience, I can point out yours truly and my girlfriend from Ramaz, an MTA and a Ramaz girl. Okay. And that talk, see what the Rav said, Kol Dol Dido Fake, he took Shir HaShirim, and what's the story in Shir HaShirim? That the simple story without the allegory is simply that love comes once and opportunity comes once. And don't misstep. Don't let it go by you. And the story here, this boy and girl, this man and lady are in love. And he comes by and knocks on her door. And She's tired, it's 9 o'clock at night. Pashatati yet kuntati. I took off my clothes. I'm wearing pajamas, slip, whatever. Eichal bishenu, how can I get dressed now? I don't have the energy. I have to put on makeup. A lady has to get ready. And she doesn't open the door. And he goes away. And in the morning, she realizes, what did I do? What did I push him away? And she's desperate. She looks for him, shouts, can't find him. Cold, deed, the fake. He knocked on the door, and now Hamak, gone. She can't find him. All right, then, what it's telling us is that God gave us the Torah, and we could have had the Messianic period. We could have come into Israel and remained forever. And we weren't ready. We sinned the golden calf, and it's going to be a long time until we will find our beloved God and the Jewish people will come together again in totality of existence. And the Rav applied this to what happened with the state of Israel following the Holocaust. And he spoke about the various knocks. If you look into my work on the Rav, in the Rav Volume 1, I have it in great detail, but to summarize it very quickly, 6 different knocks. Number 1, the establishment of the State of Israel politically was a miracle. And I remember the Rav saying this, and nothing has changed. He said, never has Russia and America agreed. Think, he said this in 56. We're now in 23, and we're back. Russia, America, the Western world, look with the Ukraine. They wanted to westernize. Look what Putin is doing. And take a look, the State of Israel, both Russia and America voted in favor of establishing the State of Israel. So he said, number 1, you see, it was a political miracle. He also said that, in my opinion, the whole United Nations was established for only one reason, to enable Israel to declare itself a state. So that's one miracle that happened. Then the battlefield, just think for a moment, Israel, army, all the Arab countries, endless weapons. We faced an American embargo, and who are our soldiers? We were overwhelmed with refugees who survived the Holocaust, and with Oriental Jews running away from their countries because the Arabs were killing them once the Jews wanted a state. What kind of army? What kind of equipment? Guns smuggled in from Czechoslovakia. Planes go to Tel Aviv and you'll see where they put the parts of the planes together. Sarona. You've been there, Charlie. It's fascinating to see it. You know, you can't believe it today. My grandson, and I told him, you know, this book on the tanks is almost out. I told him I'll show it off and share. Only problem is it's in Hebrew. I don't know how many of my listeners read modern Hebrew. All right, I read modern Hebrew, but that's... All right, Be'ezrat Hashem, there'll be an English translation. It's today I have 2 grandsons, one grandson a career officer, involved weapons development. So, who could believe this? This is a kid, I mean, he's the best Balkore of all my descendants. Learns Dafyomi, that's what he's doing. He's the troop carrier, Eitan, that's his baby. Have another grandson, big Talmud Chacham. Works for a foe, can't even tell his grandfather where he works and what he does. Okay? All right. Baruch Hashem. It's, What a miracle, what a miracle. Oh, am I happy to see Vic? You have no idea. My shaliach has arrived. Okay. Your sister got in, your brother? Okay. Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. So you see, this, we defeated all these Arab countries. What a miracle. Then the Rav said, there was a third knock, a third reality. And this is so important. Again, today no one's religious. The world, Europe, God is gone. America, God is gone. Baruch Hashem, in this country, we're doing a lot better. But theologically, what did the church say? You rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, dupes, betrayed, degenerate, debauched Jews can never come home to Israel because you don't believe in Jesus. It's not a complimentary term. What's your name, young man? Yonatan, you know Yiddish? Not really. How do you learn Torah if you don't learn in Yiddish? I learned in Lakewood. They convinced me that as the Eibishter get at Yiddish with Moshe Rabbeinu. How do I know Yiddish? I'm a third generation American. Oh boy. But you're right. Do you attach to like be a vidlach al pachot? Exactly. Exactly. Attach liach. Tikabel, sir. I have students, you have no idea. One student, Rabbi Doctor, he said, you almost sort of tell his letter to me, his email. Yesterday I eulogized Bill Spentheim, so I called her a Talmidah Hachama, who was not a feminist. So he says it should really be Talmidat Chacham, that Talmud Chacham means you're a Talmud of a sage. For a woman it should be Talmidat Chacham. And I wrote back to him, I dictated to Yomo, you may be right, but language is the way people construct it. And if I'm going to be the only moron in Israel to say Talmidat Chacham, I'll be left off the stage. But it's interesting. Anyway, you can't have Israel, you can't have Jerusalem. So we got Israel in 48, and the Rav said, terrific miracle. But they still said we didn't have Jerusalem. Take a look what happened in 67. Okay? So that's the third miracle. Okay. The fourth miracle, I don't even know if the Rav comprehended how true his words were. My dear students, how many Jews should there be in the world today? 30 million Jews, minimum. Where have they gone? Forget about Hitler. I'm talking America, England, Australia. Where have they gone? Assimilation. Intermarriage. The State of Israel woke up the assimilated Jewish youth. And this is the miracle of the Balei Tshuva movement. And it's very emotional for me, because I grew up in the Bronx, I told you 1,000 times, over 700,000 Jews in the Bronx alone. I don't think you could find 10 families who were Shomer Torah Mitzvot. Massive, massive assimilation. And take a look what we have today. And it all began from the State of Israel. It all began, I'll tell you, in my humble opinion, the Six-Day War. There were 3 weeks that, from the time NASA went into the Straits of Terrain and blocked us, there were 3 long weeks. Chabad began a Tefillin campaign. Remember? Chabad. The Rebbe said, put tefillin on every soldier. Veriru kolam eretz ki shem Hashem nekra alecha veyaru mimecha. And you'll succeed in the war. And that campaign began, but it's much more than that. In Russia, we spoke about yesterday how I got involved in Russia. I told the story with the Mossad. So I can tell you in Russia, and I've said this before, I'll say it again. The kiss the TV when you see a television, because the TV woke up Russian Jewry. It's the second greatest miracle next to the state of Israel. What do I mean the TV? In Russia, televisions cost nothing. You took a loan from where you worked, 100 rubles, paid back a ruble a year. Abraham, why were they so anxious? Everyone should have a TV. Propaganda. My wife and I used to watch the television in Russia. You could fall with laughter. They have the person commenting on the fence in uniform with so many medals. When he leaned over, you felt he would fall over. He had so many medals on him. And it was propaganda. The three-week period, what did they show on television? How the Arabs are going to conquer the Jews. And they showed movies in Yerushalayim, how they're digging trenches. I just saw one of the weekend Alonim that some lady said, I saw pictures my grandmother digging trenches in Yerushalayim, you know, that the Arab, that the Jordanian tanks shouldn't be able to move forward. Beis Yaakov girls were digging trenches. And her grandmother was very proud. She said, I'm digging trenches to help the state of Israel. My grandmother dug trenches. Soon afterwards, the Jews were shot and buried in the trenches. And the Russians told me when they watched the television, the Jews in Russia, the refusnikim, they told me when they watched, they didn't pay attention to the propaganda they were hearing, but they saw Jewish boys, Jewish girls. These are our brothers. These are our sisters. And it brought them back to a realization of what it means to be a Jew. And the Rav hit the nail here, wow, on the head. The state of Israel, why does the New York Times hate us today? Why? Why does Biden, the Jews surrounding him, they hate us? It's very simple. They're all intermarried. They're all assimilating. We're reminding them the Jews exist, the Torah exists, God exists, Halacha exists. We want continuity. They're going crazy. The whole world has a birth rate. Russia's going to go under. They don't have enough people. Who's going to, you need people? China, Russia. Could you imagine what's going on? Israel, the highest birth rate of any Western country. Kanain Harav, Kain Halav, Kain Yirbu. And my family, my greater Israeli family, where, you know, many of us are here, we're doing our share to guarantee there'll be Jews around 100 years from now. So that is a fourth great miracle. And the whole Ba'alei Tshuva after 67 are Sameach, Eish HaTorah, why you was involved, and then the greatest of all, NCSY. This is an achievement second to none. Hundreds of millions of dollars have been poured in from Kashrut, from the OU around the world into NCSY and Kiruv Rechokim. And I know here in the Kollel they have classes. It's a whole industry today, I'll call it. Eich Lekarev, how to present. I don't know. I'm a Litvak. I told you 1,000 times over, I would never stand on a corner and ask, did you put on tefillin? Lulav and Etrog, you didn't put on tefillin? Smack your face, get out of here, you guy gummer, you garnish to stock oisvaf. But they teach you. How? Eich lekarev? And Stuart, I have to admit, many years later, the Rav was interviewed, and a guy named Rakefit wrote up an article on the Rav in Chabad. It's been already published and republished 4 times. I think the 5th is coming out shortly. I gave permission. Anyone who wants to republish my work has my permission. But just give you know, the rules of scholarship. You have to acknowledge who you got it from and where it was published, etc. So the Rav said in the interview, 1977, with Mariv, with Shalom Yerushalmi, interviewed him. And the Rav said to him, when Chabad asks you to put on tefillin, it's much more than that. Fine, they're asking you to do a simple act. But the person who does it, many times will start to ask, what did I just do? Who am I? Where do I come from? Why are the tefillin important? And from that simple act, a person can yet become a total Jew and return home b'lev v'nefesh. So there's no question what we see on the floor. Okay. The fifth knock, and this is something the Rav could appreciate more than anyone. Dam Yehudi eino hefka. What we Jews have gone through, the pogroms, Golda Meir, Kishinev, World War I, after World War I, the Reds versus the Whites, and whenever they wanted a little fun, they killed Jews. Don't have to talk about World War II. And today, Baruch Hashem, we can't say it's perfect. We still lose lives, but when you touch a Jew and make him bleed, the state of Israel stands up. Tzva Hagana Yisrael, the IDF. And to add to Rebbe's words again, I come back to 1976. A young man who had come in Aliyah from America in 69 is finally inducted into the Israeli army. And when the young lady, the soldier at Bakum, at the Basis Klitao Miyun, where induction takes place, Ramat Gan at that time, and gives me my uniform, I put it on, and I make a shechiyana. And you have to understand, I make a shechiyana. Don't have to hide, don't have to be frightened. Baruch Hashem. The sixth knock, of course, is the one that brings us all here. There was a white paper. Al Jolson sang, no place to go after World War II. It's just beyond words. The St. Louis, America turned it around, sent it back to Europe. That was at 41, 42. Excuse me. And everyone was killed. Where can you go? Where can you turn? State of Israel opened its doors. First act of the new government, the declared state, every Jew is welcome. There is no white paper. And who would ever dream, the Rav's time when he spoke, who would ever dream a time would come when the majority of Jews in the world live in Israel. And we're there, where we're over 7 million Jews. Halachically, it's way more than a majority. Of course, I'm willing to guess that lo aleinu, 40% to 50% of American Jews who think they're Jewish are not Jewish, al pi halacha. It's sad, but this is the reality. So what do you see from this? That you look at the ground, you look what's happened. And as the Rav said in that famous drasha that we quoted last week, if the elders of the religious world who oppose Zionism, if they would only see what has happened, they would embrace religious Zionism, b'levu nefesh. It's like the brothers of Joseph, who had to acknowledge, if not for Yosef, how would the Jews have survived? Okay, but now I want to come down and look at what has happened. Look on the ground, look at the people. And here we have the most basic problem that the Sadmut have raised. How could anything good come out of Theodor Herzl? What did he know about Yiddishkeit? What did he observe? In his early youth, he spoke about marching to the church, mass assimilation. How do we deal with Herzl? Stewie, if your sister would have gone to Beis Yaakov, she would have thought that Herzl's last name was Yimach Shmo. Got it? You go to a certain yeshiva, Herzl, Yimach Shmo. Who was Herzl? What happened? Why did it work? I will show you if you believe in Chazal, this miracle of the State of Israel could only have come about through Theodor Herzl. This is what the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted, and I'll show you in Midrash Rabbah exactly why, and it's irrefutable. But first, let me go back to what I've said many times. Herzl was not the first to talk about return to Israel, return to Zion. It's part of our religion, part of our Torah, part of everything we believe in. Eretz Yisrael, La'am Yisrael, Al-Pi Torah Yisrael. By the 1800s, nationalism became rampant. Austria, Hungary, Poland, France, wherever you go, nationalism. So the Jews too got a push. It's time, if you've read Kalash Svarim, you know what I'm referring to. If the Poles believe in nationalism, it's a Chilul Hashem if we Jews don't believe in nationalism. Our country, our land, Eretz Yisrael, Lech Lecha Me'atzecha. And the truth is that the first people to talk about returning to Israel on a practical, human, daily, tangible basis were great Rabbanim. Rav Yehuda Alkalai. By the way, they say Herzl was influenced by Rav Yehuda Alkalai. It turns out his grandparents were great devotees of Rav Alkalai. But Rav Yehuda Alkalai, Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kailasha, Rav Shmuel Malava, they all preached what we would call today modern Zionism. But there was one problem, and it's a problem with many great Rabbanu Mechanchim. We're busy. I take myself as an example. I get emails, people want to meet me. They hear the lectures, they think, who knows what Rakefet is. Who has time? You know my age. Koach is limited. I'm going through Shas al Haseda with Rishonim, etc. A third time, I don't want the Ribbono Shel to say to me, you didn't try to master it all. I tried my best. What could I do? I'm only a mortal. The memory remembers the Manchil's batting average. I can't tell you every daf and bab mitzvah. Do you know who the man, Yonatan, who the Magio was? Well, it's a miracle. Do you know that the Magio only trusted Jews?
I haven't seen the shirim.
You've ever heard my shirim? You know, I met with the Magio's handler, wow, and I gave him hell and Chabad, brought him back to Yiddishkeit. Okay? I never say a bad word about Chabad after Morris Engelberg. The one 20 years ago and the one 3 years ago. You're busy. I'm writing. I'm teaching. I have a wife, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. All right. Rabbanim, Rav Kalisher, Rav Alkali, Rav Molava, Gedolei Yisrael, Stewie, they're busy, kehilat, preaching, teaching, writing, leading, family, children, Zionism. Herzl became a meshugah ledava echad. Zionism. His wife never forgave the Zionist movement. Are you aware of that? They took away her husband. Children, don't ask. Mental illness. One surviving grandson. Suicide. I don't think there's a direct descendant of, not that I don't think, I know, there's no direct descendant of Herzl walking the face of the earth. Adavi v'layada, adim alohike, total dedication. He woke up, the Dreyfus trial, it shocked him. And he went to work. And he had money. Parents were well off. Parents were in favor. Son discovered Jewish existence. And this man put together in 1897 the first Congress of the Zionist movement. Now, do you have any idea what an achievement this is? Abe, David, we're a little state of Israel. Do you see unity here? Try to put together unity among Jews. All right, the left, the right, the religious, forget about that. I challenge you, Stewie, to put together unity among Shomer Shabbos Jews. Agera Chosid, Metabelsa Chosid, with the Panovich, with the Merkaz Harav, HaChoma, try to put them together? Wow. I'd be at Mashiach. Here in the class, you went yesterday. I told Rav Heschel Shechel, I told Heshi, Mashiach will succeed. He looked at me, I said, let me tell you. In Israel, the joke is, how can Mashiach succeed? He'll come, they'll look at his kippah, no good. In this classroom a few weeks ago, there was a Satma Chassid in full regalia, a Gera Chassid, Big Talmud Chacham, full regalia, and a Lakewood graduate. And all three had one thing in common. Their Rebbe Murfak is named Aaron Rakefet. Got it? If I can do it, Mashiach, 1 billion times more, he will succeed, despite whatever color kippah he's wearing. But Herzl called the Congress. All right. I'm now quoting from their... Regarding Theodor Herzl, many books have been written, but the best one is Alex Bein, B-E-I-N. Theodor Herzl, a biography. It originally was written in German. I'm quoting from an English translation, published by Jewish Publication Society, 1945. I believe you also have a Hebrew translation. This is the biography that they quote. And he describes 1897, Basel, Switzerland, and the delegates began to arrive several days before the date set for the opening. Every train brought new ones. From Russia, from Germany, from Austro-Hungary, from Bulgaria, Romania, England, Holland, Belgium, Palestine, the Scandinavian countries, America, Algeria. There were veteran members of the Chovevei Zion movement, which already was on the map. Chovevei Zion, Chibat Zion, Chovevei Zion, we have streets named after it here, and recent converts to the movement. There were Orthodox Jews and atheists, well-to-do members of the middle class, and representatives of the socialist movement. White-haired people in their 70s, today you would say in their 80s, but then 70s, and young students. And the total number of delegates on the opening day was 197. The majority of them saw Herzl for the first time. Until then, they had only heard of him or had read his articles and his appeal for the election of the delegates. In the latter, he had drilled into their minds the necessity of imparting to the Congress by the representative character of the delegates, by the weightiness of the deliberations, a dignity which will cast a lasting impression at the world at large. Now, do you understand what that means? Jews to do something dignified, to care what the world thinks. All eyes are upon them in Basel. And Herzl declared, this Congress is to be the greatest council which will be followed by greater acts. The delegate cards carried the twofold symbol of the ancient Wailing Wall and of the new Jewry of modern Palestine. You can see this in any encyclopedia. And you have here the old and the new. Tel Aviv. What they called the Wailing Wall, what we called the Kotel HaMaravi.
What did they say in the original talk? Was it Wailing Wall? Did they use
Wailing Wall? I'm quoting Wailing Wall. I wouldn't say Wailing Wall.
What's the Hebrew or Yiddish term they use?
It's in English. This is the translation. And it says, one second.
You know what the original?
The delegates are the ancient Wailing Wall and of the new Jewry of modern Palestine. These cards, what they said, check it out. You can go online right now, see if you come up with the original. But the English is Wailing Wall. And a large sign displayed the Tsar of Zion and the words, Zionisten Congress. At one side hung a flag, a white field with two blue stripes, and the Star of David. David Wolfson, clever, practical, and steeped in tradition, had chosen the colors of the Talit or prayer shawl, and the majority of the delegates actually took it for granted that this was the old Jewish flag. Now, this too, David Wolfson, you should know, was a Shomer Shabbos Jew, was a Frum Jew, 100%. And that's the story I've told many times, that Herzl would do anything to bring someone close to Zionism. One time in Vienna, he met with David Wilson on Shabbos. And it was a coffee shop, part of a hotel. And they were sitting there and drinking. And David Wilson obviously would only drink what was permitted with Shabbos and kosher. And David Wilson had a nephew, a Hasidic kid, a young Hasidic kid, who wanted to meet Herzl. Everyone's talking Herzl. And he comes, and there's Herzl on Shabbos smoking. And Wolfson told him afterwards, "You should know, my nephew said he'll never have anything to do with the Zionist movement. You're Mechallel Shabbos in front of them." And Herzl told off Wolfson, "Why didn't you tell me that your nephew is a Hasidic young man? I wouldn't have smoked in front of him." So you see what's happening here. Herzl, Nordau, you get to, Herzl, Wolfson, you come to Max Nordau, and we'll talk about him in a second. Nordau was second in command to Herzl. Who was Nordau? His father was a Rav, a Talmud Chacham. He was a Melamed. He raised him, he educated him. And then Nordau became a man of the world, intermarried his wife. He never divorced his wife. She went along with him, but halachically, intermarried. And Nordau had a big medical practice, and he was what we would call today a psychiatrist. I don't know if formally that had the education and the label and the degree at that time. And one of the fascinating stories, I give you the exact source for this, in the Zionist Idea. It's a book that was published by, here in Israel, it was published the first time in English by Keter Publishing. I was already working for Keter with the encyclopedia. This goes back to the late 60s. And Hertzberg edited it. And there they tell a beautiful story, which may be anecdotal, I don't know. But as the Rav used to say, they wouldn't tell these stories about me or you, etc. So an anecdote also conveys an idea. And the story is that Herzl, when he was working for the Zionist movement and bringing the Congress, and Herzl, they told him, "You're mentally ill. What are you doing? What chances do they have success?" And he went to see Nordau. "Tell me, Max, am I mentally ill? Am I normal? What's the story?" And Nordau examines him and talks to him and finally says, "All I can tell you, if this is your mental illness, I'm also mentally ill with the same illness." And they became very, very close. And Nordau, here's a beautiful story. You know, I've said this before, that I couldn't handle the picture of the new government, everyone there with a tie and a jacket. This is Israel. We don't have to live the way they live in England when they bury the Queen. Everyone has to dress up and what goes on. And simple clothes, other values in life. Don't spend a fortune on what they come up with in Milan, Italy. And Nordau comes to the Congress, and when the latter came, referring to Nordau, came in an ordinary suit of clothes, he was persuaded to go back to his hotel and put on the official uniform, a frock coat and a white tie. Something was needed to symbolize for the delegates the break with the ordinary, the proclamation of the something great and beautiful in the dream which had brought them together. And I have to say, it makes sense. It makes sense. People tangible. You're a chassid, Shabbos, a bekisha, Streimel, right, my world, I can't help it. I have difficulty associating with Lushin and Malchut. A white shirt, that tells me it's Shabbat. And wow, but could you understand what's happening here, Herzl? The foresight, the insight. Go back, came in a weekday suit. No, this is the Zionist Congress. We're changing the face, the future, the reality of the Jewish people. Dress properly, Charlie, like a Kohen Gadol. You follow me? This is what's Kahuna about? What's the Gemara in Pesachim that they brought all the gold to the Beit HaMikdash? What do you need so much gold? Ah, Ein Zeblam, there's nothing lacking. A person wants to be perfect. It's a symbolism. It's a symbolism. And by the way, David, you did basic training, you did the army. No, in the army you have clothes that's called Bigdei Avodah. And then a formal session. You ever see what the Air Force looks like? The Navy, ready to learn them. I you got to be in the Navy to dress up, boy, when they have Rabbi, Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark, what part were you in of the American forces?
The Army.
The Army, no, but the Navy, when they dress up, they make you guys look like cheapskates.
We had dress blues.
Yeah, you could manage, you could equal them, all right, I don't know. Here, I see the Navy, but they, when do they dress up? It's same mole in a yovel, once in a yovel. Okay, and when Herzl rose to speak at the Zionist Congress, he set forth in a single sentence the task of the Congress. We are here to lay the foundation stone of the house, which is to shelter the Jewish nation. Zionism is the return of the Jews to Judaism even before their return to the Jewish land. Now, once again, you understand what Herzl is saying here? How many Jews, how many Balei Tshuva? Look at the Russian story. Look at the American Balei Tshuva. First, Israel, Zionism. And that brought them to Jewish consciousness. And the Jewish consciousness brings them to Torah and mitzvah. I walked out of Old Rivka. I've been davening in the same shul Shabbos morning since 69, the 630 million. Whatever learning I know I have is only due to Old Rivka, because by 8 o'clock I'm home, kiddush. My wife and daughters used to go off to shul. No one could bother me, no telephones. Just my Gemara and Rambam. Nowadays, it's different. I tell you, at 4 o'clock in the morning, I was learning today. I wake up at 4. I can't help it. It's age. Shabbos, I forced myself. So this past Shabbat, my Gemara opened at 4:45 already. 4:45. When I went to shul already at 6:15, I left the house. I felt, I've accomplished a daf and a half, Baruch Hashem. What a feeling. And one second I started to tell you with Ohel Rivka, and this is the feeling that Herzl inculcated within the Jews. This is the feeling. Came out of Ohel Rivka one Shabbos morning, and two middle-aged men hugging each other and greeting each other. And one says to the other, these Americans, I hear them speaking English, and one says to the other, how can you live without a Shabbos? And they started dancing. And I came home and told my wife, I'm ashamed of myself. Did I ever dance and say such words? These are Balei Tshuva. They have a feeling that we who grew up, I've been ashamed of mitzvah from the age of 11 on. And we grew up with Torah, Shabbos, take it for granted. Jewish film, it opens the world to you. And wow, what appreciation. Okay. Now, a few days later, he was keeping a diary, and in the diary, he wrote, and this is the most famous quote of all from Theodor Herzl, if I were to sum up the Basel Conference in a single phrase, which I would not dare to make public, I would say, in Basel, I created the Jewish state. Were I to say this aloud, it would be greeted with universal laughter. But perhaps 5 years hence, in any case, certainly 50 years hence, everyone will perceive it. Well, my dear students, 1897, at 50 years, 1947, the UN votes for partition, which meant the establishment of the Jewish state. So you see, if we're going to judge on the ground, what does God want? Joseph's brothers, we want no part of modernity, no part of change, no part of assimilation in a new world. We're not worried about it. And as the Rebbe phrases it, Aguda, 1902, we have Chaslovich, we have Warsaw, we have Brisk, we have Minsk, we have Mir, we have Telz. Why worry about tomorrow? Who has to go and be a pioneer? And the Mizrahi, we don't know what tomorrow will bring. We have fears that it'll be terrible, torture, persecution. Jews will need salvation. Let us prepare. Let us get the land of Israel ready. Joseph, we're going down to Egypt. We're told already. We're going to be strangers in a strange land. Let's get prepared. Let's get ready so we will survive. Well, look what happened in Egypt. Look what Yosef HaTzadik did for us. Look what the state of Israel did for us. Look where we would be if we didn't follow the leadership of Eretz Yisrael, La'am Yisrael, Al-Pitoret Yisrael, the slogan of the Mizrahi, 1902, organized, as we explained last week. Look at the ground. Majority opinion doesn't decide this issue. It's what has happened, what we can touch, what is tangible, what is realistic. And Herzl wrote, I mean, this is overwhelming. People say, generally you'll hear people lecturing, they say, Herzl said this at the Zionist Congress. He didn't say it in public. It was in his diary. At least in 50 years, what we have established here is the Jewish state. But I want to go further. Look at the ground. Look at the people. Herzl, everyone, papers, newspapers, you had already a bit of a collective unity in the world. It's not like today with the computer that I can be giving shiur and people from America and England are looking at me, etc. But even then, you had the start of a global village. It took weeks, it reached every newspaper in the world. And people heard about Herzl, and he was very photogenic. His long black beard, good looking, like people would refer to the picture like they envisioned Moshe Rabbeinu, David Melech Yisrael. And in 1903, less than a year before he died, he attended a big meeting in St. Petersburg. St. Petersburg, Russia, let me just say a few words about it. Russia has always had two capitals. Yomo, you visited Moscow? Baruch Hashem, so I'm not the only one in the class, but I bet I spent more time in Moscow than you did. That's for sure. You visited Leningrad, St. Petersburg? No. You never went to the Hermitage? Oh, my.
Not in person.
I know why you didn't go to the Hermitage, because all those pictures were robbed by the communists when they took over 100 years ago and nationalized everything, so you're worried, I'll pee din, you're not allowed to have enough from what was robbed. Okay. Yom is a tzaddik, Baruch Hashem. Yosef Mordechai, during the winter, it's very hard to hold congresses and meetings in Moscow. It is cold. I've been in Moscow 30 degrees below zero. Riga was even colder, 85. Oh. St. Petersburg or Leningrad, it's much warmer. So that is the winter capital of Russia. Moscow is the summer capital. The Jews, many big meetings were held in St. Petersburg. It's interesting. That's where Reb Yitzchak Blaser was Rav in St. Petersburg. That's where the Alter Rebbe, all of Chabad, begins in St. Petersburg. And Herzl, darn it, get involved in Russia. My mind already, Stewie, is back in the 80s, 10 years. It's a long part of our life, Malk and I. Then the Iron Curtain fell, and who needed us? Any Israeli could get into Russia. It was unbelievable. But leave that for another time. Herzl was at St. Petersburg. The Jews had a big political meeting there. And on the way back, he decided to stop in Vilna. Now, Vilna, let's explain what Vilna is. Vilna was the Jerusalem of Lithuania. That's what it was called. My grandfather, all my grandparents are from Lithuania and White Russia. But one Zayde was from Vilna. And boy, was he proud. Zolsta Alamol, the Gedenken, as I say to David, is a Vilna Geborener, that your grandfather, David Fogel, was born in Vilna. And Vilna was the capital. That was the Vilna Gaon, and that was the library there, the famous Kashun Library. And there were Maskilim there as well. But Vilna pulsated with Jewish identity. You're looking at a Jew that will now boast that I gave the first shiur in Vilna when the Iron Curtain fell. 89, I gave a shiur in the surviving synagogue where Reb Chaim Moshe davened. I gave a shiur in Yiddish and translated into Hebrew. For the elderly people, Yiddish was the language, and for the youngsters, they already wanted not Yiddish, they didn't understand Yiddish, they wanted Hebrew. It was interesting. So, Herzl is now going to visit Vilna, traveling back to his hometown elsewhere, Hungary, not Russia. People, Herzl coming to Vilna. His visit to Vilna was announced in advance. I'm citing from Herzl's biography, from Bein. A tremendous ovation awaited him. The streets through which he rode were almost impassable because of the throngs of spectators. The terrified police forbade all demonstrations, listened in on all telephone conversations, and kept close watch on all his movements. His projected tour of the Jewish quarter, the banquet in the town hall, and the visit to the Great Synagogue had to be canceled on instruction from the police. He did, however, ride through, quote, tumultuous Jewish streets, end quote, to the community house where a dense crowd of representatives and deputations awaited him. One of the leaders greeted him as, quote, the greatest son of the Jewish people, then read out a Hebrew address from a parchment scroll when he afterwards presented to Herzl. Old Reb Shlaimele, you know who Reb Shlaimele was? That was Reb Shlaimele Cohen, a Gaon b'Yisrael, a member of the Vilna Beis Din, lifted his hands over the Zionist leader and pronounced the Birchat Kohanim. The historian Zev Yavetz, one of the founders of Mizrahi afterwards, presented him with a small Torah scroll in a carved holder as a gift of honor from the Vilna community. And this is the way he was greeted. The evening of the day, a secret banquet was tendered him in the village of Verko, 8 kilometers from Vilna. On this journey, Herzl asked his companions to show him the houses of the poor Jews. The sight so shook him that at this time he could not keep back his tears. He was no less moved when a poor Jew refused with thanks the gold coin which he offered him, saying that he only wanted to see Herzl. I mean, this is so powerful. Look at the ground. Look at what happened. Look at the way he was revered. Yonatan, how many poor Jews do you know that if you offered them a gold coin, they would refuse it? No? Where do you live?
Highland Park.
Highland Park. Don't have, all right, you don't have. If you lived in Flatbush or Borough Park, you went into shul. In Borough Park, you can't daven. I davened there many years in a shtibble, Nachut Moshe. Every 2 minutes, someone else was coming around bothering you for tzedakah. Not so easy. But imagine a gold coin, and that tells you something. Reb Shlaimele Cohen, we're talking about a Gaon b'Yisrael. If I'm not mistaken, check it out. He may be one of the Haskamis on the Mishnah Brura. And gives him Birchat Kohanim. While the banquet in Verko was in progress, there suddenly appeared outside the house Jewish boys and girls of Vilna who made a pilgrimage through the night to see and hear him. They sang Hebrew songs. One young worker proposed a toast in which he spoke of the time when, quote, King Herzl would reign. I'm right, I have a footnote here. He granted approbation to Rabbi Israel Meir Cohen on the publication of the Mishnah Brura. Divine providence truly shone upon Herzl. And 50 years later, even Andrei Gromyko expressed his government's support for the right of the Jews to establish their own state in Palestine. And I, this is the story, Andre Gromyko, who are we talking about? His wife was Jewish. She's the lady, Golda Meir writes about this, that when she was the first ambassador to Russia, communist Russia, and she meets the foreign minister and she's welcome, and the foreign minister's wife says to her in Yiddish, Ich bin echet a Yiddish tochter, I am also a Jew. Jewish thought. It's the assimilation. What Zionism did to save us. And we who are smart enough to come in Aliyah, just think of the families we've raised here. You can't even compare. Stewie, my dear Rabbi Stewart Vishtandik, told me about his sister who was my student and the family she raised here. I'm overwhelmed. You understand? Your parents, what your father went through with the Nazis. Remember your father speaking? Remember he quoted my talk on the 70s Holocaust Day? And look what you've given back to our future. But now I want to come back to the Satmaruv. Avi Avot HaTumah Herzl. This miracle of the State of Israel could only come about through Herzl. When you walked into Rav Tzvi Yehuda's home in Geula, in the foyer you saw on one wall a picture of his father, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, and on the other wall there was a big picture, see it, the Herzl. Did you ever see it? Anyone? You know, I saw it. I was very close, of course. Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook was married to my neighbor's sister. Rav Chutna's sister was married to Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook. It's hard to believe. Rav Yitzchak Chutna, they're all in the same family. Chaim Berlin. Can only come about Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook. So Rav Binyanim said Herzl. Why? I'll give you the source in a moment, the Medrash Rabbah. You just read about it in the Chumash. Avraham Moshe Rabbeinu, where was he raised? Who was he raised by? An Egyptian princess saved his life. Winds up in Midian, so distant from the Jews, so distant from what they were experiencing in Egypt. And you know what the Medrash says? Moshe Rabbeinu had to be raised in royalty, away from the Jewish masses. Had he come from among the Jewish people and said, God will take us out, God will redeem us, get ready. All the prophecies that we've read about in Shemot and we'll read this coming Shabbat in the Era, the Jews would have laughed him away. Nachayid, another Jew, part of us. Who is he? What is he? Ah, but when he came dignified, cultured, raised, royalty, Midian, Bat Paro, there's even an explanation, you look into Dat Mikra, that Puan Shifa, that they were also Egyptians. Not the way we read it in the Medrash, that they were Jews and relatives.
It's in the Medrash.
It's in the Medrash too. Yeah, no, I'm sure it is. Dat Mikra brings it down. But I never saw it until I saw it in Dat Mikra. And they were also Egyptians. Ah, this is a Jew, a stranger. He's not one of us, impoverished, a pauper, ibidabagin, bent over. Ah, he has a message of redemption. Listen to him. Accept it. Herzl? Exactly. Exactly the same. And you have to remember, enlightenment, what it did to us, the assimilation, the intermarriage, the hitbolalut, the ivrit meduberet. Wow. Another rabbi. Go tell the North Tel Aviv crowd something. Observe Shabbat. You'll be the happiest people in the world. You'll be redeemed. You'll have spirituality. You connect with your ancestors and pave the future for us. Don't laugh at you. Ah, who is he? What does he know? Ah, backward Jew. No concept of modernity. But when someone comes down the mountain from modernity and from that world and brings a message of spiritual greatness and redemption, people will listen. And ultimately, the Zionist movement, with all its faults, and you know that I'm not one to declare Ben-Gurion a tzaddik, far from it. But with all its faults, Ben-Gurion built the state, declared the state, went against America, went against the State Department, one of the greatest enemies of the Jewish people, black and white, went and declared a state, saved the Jews after Hitler. Irreligious Jews, religious Jews, miracle has happened here. But we have the state to thank. Go back to the Rebbe's talk. The Sheish Tfikot. What medrash am I talking about? Shmot Rabbah, Perik, Chamesh 5, Subdivision 2. Now, I want to tell you about this medrash. It doesn't, I once, a girl, it comes back to me, 1972 in Michlala, the old Michlala, no one knows where it was already, in Beit Vagan. And I come, and there's a library downstairs, and I come out, and come out of class, between classes, and this girl's crying. And she says, Rabbi, I have to look up a source in the Tanchuma, and it's not there. I have the source. I told her, go back in and see if there's a Tanchuma, the Buber edition. It's the father of Shlomo Buber, father of Martin Buber. Check that one. I meet her a day later. She says, you don't know what you did to me. You saved my life. It was two different editions. One had it, one didn't. This Medrash Rabbah you will not find in every Medrash Rabbah. Some have it, the source I gave you. Some don't. Charlie, hey, wait a minute. How do you know it's legitimate? Maybe some rotten Zionist like Rakefet falsified the Medrash and put it in. You follow? The other ones don't have it. It's no problem. Why? The Ramban cites this very Medrash. Look at the Ramban Shmot, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yudchet, 3:18. In the Ramban, and he cites this medrash. What does it tell us? It's legitimate. It's ancient. It's there. For whatever reasons, two variant texts developed. Could be the scribe was busy. He overslept. He skipped the passage. But what a medrash. And I end off the class today, not the topic, but I end off the class, and I have to say to someone who's not here now, but the Ben Turin, when you hear this shiur, you were right. I said to Ben last week, I think I can finish out the Satmar rebuke or reprimand, call it what you wish, negation, next week. He said, Rebbe, you'll never be able to do it in 1 week. There's a reason why he knew the text here, and he was right. All right, let me come back to Oel Rivka, the 6:30 minyan. Mark, you ever been to Detroit in the 50s, the 60s, the 40s perhaps? It's a very prominent rabbi there, Rabbi Yitzchak Stoneman, right? He was a Yudapeish Rav who had studied in the Yudapeish Yeshivat. I write about him here in the text. Rabbi Stoneman was a graduate of the Radnor Slabodka Nevada Yeshivat. He immigrated to the United States in 1924 and became a prominent spiritual leader in Detroit. He published on the Chumash Minchat Yitzchak, and he has Haskama from Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. All right? Not many people have Haskama from Rav Soloveitchik. All right? Baruch Hashem. Elliot, don't feel bad for me. What I have is even more than Haskama. That letter, in Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein called it the most important letter his father-in-law had ever written, that he ever saw. And that letter that I publish as a haskama to my work on the Rav, if I were Chabadnik, I'd announce a course. It's a one-page letter. I could give 1 year worth of profound lectures on that letter, what the Rav is referring to, etc. The heart of Yiddishkeit is in that letter. But let's come back here. I'm now quoting in English translation of my own from Rabbi Stoneman's Minchat Yitzchak. Let me give you the exact, what follows is translation of the Hebrew text. The citation of the Medrash and its analysis appears in Volume 2, Shemot, page 53. I quote, when we recount the early history of the Zionist movement, we notice that many of the earlier leaders were totally European. The Jews knew very little about their nation and its core outlooks. These pace setters were uprooted from their Jewish roots at an early age, like Moshe Rabbeinu. They spent many of their most fruitful years in an alien atmosphere, yet they were among the first to be roused by the Zionist vision of redemption and rebirth. Is this not the expression of divine intervention in the Jewish saga? Among these pioneers, there were individuals who rejected religion and sanctity. Their bodies were never adorned by tefillin. They were apparent candidates for assimilation and withdrawal from Jewish identity. Yet the Jewish movement inspired them to return to their brethren and homeland. They were among the first to defend the honor of people and to aspire to rebuild our homeland. Is this not an incredible phenomenon in our generation? And this is the Midrash. Moshe Rabbeinu had to come down from the palace, had to come down from Midian, father-in-law, high priest, leader of the Midianite people. And the Jews listened. They couldn't dismiss him. Herzl came from this very world. The Dreyfus trial, death to the Jews as they shouted on the streets of Paris, woke him up. And look what he accomplished. Killed himself, no two ways about it, an early death, 44 years of age. His family suffered, no two ways about it. But he put together a movement that enables us to sit here in dignity and in even greater dignity as every day goes by. Now you can understand why Reb Tzvi Yehuda Kook had two pictures up facing each other. It complements and supplements the total picture of our goals in life, what we should strive for. Eretz Yisrael, Am Yisrael, Al Pi Torah Yisrael. Look at the ground, look at the achievement. I showed Malka on Shabbos. I was shaking, thinking B'Sheva, one of the freebies they give out on Friday. A whole page, the Yeshivat and Ulpanat, under the direction of Merkaz Yeshivat Ulpanat B'nai Akiva. In our time, what was B'nai Akiva? A social club with Zionist overtones. Here in the state of Israel, tens and tens and tens of first-rate institutions devoted to Torah. What achievements. Look at the ground. Look what we're at. Please, don't call Herzl Avi Avot HaTumah. And I'll end off the Rav, and I'll give you a source later when I finish out the lecture, the concepts here. Mentioned that if Herzl had lived longer, the Rav feels he would have returned totally to Torah Tashem Tamima. No? Stewie, is the Rav right or wrong? Give me an example. Nathan Birnbaum, who attended the first Zionist Congress, who worked hand in hand with Herzl, an assimilated Jew, came back to Zionism. You know where Nathan Birnbaum wound up? Agudat Yisrael, one of their main theologians. You know who his grandson was? I believe his first name David Birnbaum, the founder of Triple SJ. That's the family. He lived a long life, twice as long as Herzl. But wow, what an accomplishment, what a story. A man, Avi Avot, Medinat Yisrael, and Jewish continuity, and the Baal Tshuva movement. Wow. So, are there any questions from the erudite audience sitting in front of me? To reiterate, what did we do today? All right, we continued our refutation of not just Satma. I don't want to go further, but it's a lot more than Satma. When Agudat Yisrael decided in 1919 there cannot be a Jewish state and Jewish sovereignty before Mashiach Tzidkenu, I don't have to comment further. As far as I know, Agudat Yisrael is sitting on some mighty, heavy financial portions of the government, and Baruch Hashem, they do good things, and I wish they do good more, and broaden a little to embellish and embrace B'lei V'Nefesh, what we have here. We'll pick up next Monday, Be'ezrat HaNatan Yov Kov, exactly where we left off. We'll pick up next Sunday, exactly where we left off yesterday, and I'll show you two amazing articles. Vic, what I said in Shia yesterday, have you heard it yet? Have you heard the Shia? You heard it? You heard it? Okay, I said that before you came in, I came home and I opened up Makor Rishon. You heard it? I couldn't believe it. So I'll leave that for next Sunday. You will not be disappointed. Let me end off here until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya Yomo. Forget about war in Kiev, your hometown, and open it up to the world. Yomo was born in Kiev. Could you imagine? He has relatives there. God have mercy.
Recording stopped.
Okay. Unmuted. Okay, are there any questions from the people around the world? All right.
Rabbi, just one thing. I don't know if you're going to bring it up, but on the same lines, your heart salt that you pointed out.
Wait, on the same line? Who pointed out?
Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. In Malachim, it talks about Yeravam Hasheni, and it explicitly says that he was a Rasha. But at some point, Hashem said, it's gotten to be too much, and he'll save the Bnei Yisrael. You know, it's that he conquered back all the land that they had lost, and he made them safe for the first time in years. He's not Moshe Rabbeinu, he's Yeravam Hasheni.
Okay, the Rav also said something similar, that Ribbono Shel Olam gave us Eretz Yisrael because it reached a point, had we not had Eretz Yisrael, we would have totally assimilated and been lost. By the way, the Hasidim say the same thing. When you meet a Hasid and you want to argue with him, you say to him, what's all this Hasidus? Why didn't God reveal it all in the Torah? So they'll answer you very simply. When did God take us out of Egypt? When we were about to fall into the Memtet Tuma, 49 levels. So, to save us, Chassidus is part of the Torah, but it was never revealed, never made public, until it was so bad after the Chmielnytsky massacres, God revealed, let us reveal the Baal Shem Tov, the Torah, the Chassidus became tangible, and it saved us. By the way, there may be some truth to it, as much as a Litvak like myself, but I have to admit, there may be truth. And the truth is, all surveys have shown that Litvakin who survived the Holocaust, the percentage that remained from was less than the Hasidim who survived. So it's food for thought. But I value what you say, and they machinami, I just added to it. So Baruch Hashem, Rabarin and the Rav, and the defenders of Hasidut are all on the same wavelength. All right, if there are no other questions, I want to
Rabbi,
thank... Yeah.
Rabbi, was the reference to Midrash Rabba or Tanchuma, or were they two separate references? It sounded like...
No, the story with Tanchuma was just to make clear that at times you can cite the Tanchuma, and if you don't make clear it's the Buber edition, the student will not find it. The reference is from Shmota, Siman Bet. Sif Bet, let's say. With the Medrash Rabbah, there are also plenty of problems. Who divided it up? How did they divide it up? You can have separate divisions. Zelo Pashut. But the standard one that I have, an Israeli one, put out by Machom HaMedrash, that's where it is. Machom HaMedrash HaMavu'ar, 1990, Vakshel Publications in 201, and the Medrash is Shmot Rabbah 5-2. What's very important is that the Ramban cites the Medrash. So no one can say to me, in my Medrash Rabbah in Palm City, this Medrash doesn't exist. You follow?
Okay. So, you know, to add to what Nachum said, Eim Abarim Smecha deals specifically with how God works through people who are not religious. And he gives us an example, again, the Medrash, that Achav
was
because he saved parts of Eretz Yisrael for Am Yisrael.
Right. Yitzchak, patience. My next topic is Eim Habanim Smecha. And then I'm going to introduce you to Rabbi Dr. Elchanan Blumenthal. These are real people for me. You see the sources. And believe me, I challenge anyone to prove that what I'm saying is incorrect. Okay? we'll get there.
I've seen also where they quote in Sefer Yechezkel, Yoshrei Ore Yisrael.
Right.
That it's dafka the shlichim, and perhaps because the datiyim didn't do enough, that the shlichim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu were others. Okay. To take care of the physical work.
We'll see that in Ein Habanim Smecha. Okay?
I think Buber was Martin Buber's grandfather. He was his Rebbe, but I think he was a grandfather.
Shlomo
was the, okay, yeah, was, he was the Rebbe, but a grandfather.
You're getting, Simon is telling me that you're absolutely right. Baruch Hashem. So I stand corrected. But on the other hand, it's not really a correction. B'nei banim harayim kabanim. So either way, we got the right person. But Shlomo was his grandfather. Shlomo was a Yid Tzadik, was a Hasidic Yid, a big Chochmat Yisrael. Buber was a different story already. And I was here, I think he was still alive when I came in Aliyah. I think he died very shortly thereafter. But in Hebrew youth, they worshipped him. You see, the youth then, humanities meant something. Today, in Hebrew youth, Bar Ilan, and everywhere else, they're closing down the humanities departments. There are no students. It's unbelievable. Everyone is in high tech and money, banking, economics, and even that. And that's going mechula. I don't know what's going to happen. But the women, thank God, become doctors. See, so we gain out of it fabulous doctors with good bedside manner. We were just at our Malka's doctor, who I know, who was once my doctor as well, and we were just with her, and we walked out. Boy, we've never saw a doctor in Israel, of course trained in England, but what a beautiful personality. You walk out, you feel good. Wow. And to be a doctor likes to be a rav. If you just yell at the people and shout and put them down, you're not going to hold the shtela long. But if you have a little seichel and you take a little chassidut and appreciate the people for what they are, wow, what a relationship. And that's the difference between Rothkopf in Lower Merion and Rothkopf in Maplewood, South Orange. Ugh, brings back memories. Nachum, best regards to your parents. Mark, Rav Dak, I want to ask you one simple question. What's the weather in New York?
Pretty cold.
See, and we're sitting
here. I'll tell you right now, it's 34 outside.
All right, and we're laughing at you because we're well into the 50s today. It's time you picked up and came where you belong.
Be colder if you were Celsius.
Yeah. You can't win with Mark, Baruch Hashem.
Next week we might hit 60.
Next week, you're almost telling me next week it's going to hit 60. They said 16 degrees. 7, oh, wow. 17. All right, I got to sign off. I got to clear the room and get ready for the next class. But I want to thank everyone. It's been a wonderful day and a wonderful day yesterday. Ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu because I'm not a youngster. And Baruch Hashem, lahagdil Torah lahadira. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya. Okay, we did it.